Good afternoon. Welcome to the Conference Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection for Senate File 2744. Today is Wednesday, May 3, and we will begin with introductions, and we'll start on the far right side of the room and go around the room.
My name is Nolan Nadala. I am the Senate Counsel.
Oh, hi. I'm Amanda Peterson, Senate DFL Research.
Linnea Michelson, Senate Republican Research.
Jordan Rasmussen, member of Senate Commerce Committee.
Judy Seeberger, Senator.
This is Tyler Klein and...
Tyler Klein, Legislative Assistant, Senator Klein.
Committee Administrator Bill Bunzer.
I'm Matt Klein, Senator Matt Klein.
Representative Zach.
Simon Brown, House Commerce Committee Administrator.
Jack Dockendorf, Legislative Assistant for House Commerce.
Representative Carly Gattiza-Watoon, House Commerce Vice Chair.
Eric Anderson, DFL Research.
Representative Tim O'Driscoll.
Casey Peterson, House Republican Research.
And Laurie Pompeo, House Research.
And Hannah Grunwald-Nolner, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Great. And we'll begin with the walkthrough of the side-by-sides. And is that going to be you?
Spreadsheets, Mr.
Start with spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair and members, the spreadsheet provided in your packet, labeled Commerce and Consumer Protection, Senate File 2744 detail, is what I'll walk through briefly. And just to orient you to the spreadsheet, the left-hand side columns are the Senate position in Senate File 2744, and on the right-hand side is the House position for Senate File 2744. The top half of page one is a quick summary of the expenditures, revenue, and net general fund in both positions, and then the rest of the spreadsheet is a detailed breakdown of each agency. And this spreadsheet does include base items and change items. I will focus only on the change items. If members have questions, happy to go into more detail. I'll just point out on line 16 for net general fund, the Senate position has $292 million in fiscal year 24-25, and that's a $10 million increase over base. In fiscal year 26-27, the Senate position has a savings of $212.8 million. In fiscal year 26-27, and that's a change in savings over the biennium of $265,775,000. And on the House side, those numbers are the same. Both positions meet the global agreement target for the commerce area, which included $10 million in fiscal year 24-25, $10 million in fiscal year 26-27. And for the premium security transfer, a savings of $275.8 million in the tails. So beginning with Department of Commerce, under financial institutions on line 38, there's a same House and Senate position of increasing service levels of $382,000 in the first biennium and $502,000 in the tails. Both Senate and House have appropriation from the Special Revenue Account for the Money Transmission Modernization Act of a one-time $12,000 expenditure in fiscal year 24-25. And I will flip to page two. Under the Administrative Services Division of Commerce, the first change item here shows up on line 61. This is the Senior Safe Fraud Prevention and for Program Staffing, and the Senate and the House have this at the same amount of $498,000 over base in new funding in each biennium, and that's an ongoing expenditure. On line 62, there's another Maintaining Current Service Levels line item. The Senate has this at $807,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $1.06 million in fiscal year 26-27. The House has this at a slightly different amount in fiscal year 24-25 at $787,000 and matching the Senate in the tails. On line 63, for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act, the Senate and House have the same amounts appropriated, $1.1 million in fiscal year 24-25 and $1 million in the base ongoing, or in the tails ongoing. On line 64, the House and Senate have the same position for Exodus lending grants for the appropriation of 500, $100,000 in fiscal year 24-25 one time. On line 65 for intermediate blends of gasoline and biofuel report, the Senate and House have the same amount appropriated of $24,000 in 24-25 and that same amount ongoing in the tails. Under the Enforcement and Market Assurance Division for Commerce, the first change item here shows up on line 85. The House and Senate have the same provision, the same appropriation amount of $62,000 in fiscal year 24-25 for the CFB body-worn cameras and $42,000 in the tails. And again, that's the same in the House position. Line 86 is another maintaining current service levels increase of $601,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $802,000 in the tails. This is the same in both positions. On line 88, for Mental Health Parity and Substance Abuse Accountability Office, the Senate has $100,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $350,000 in fiscal year 26-27. The House has the same in fiscal year 24-25, but a slightly different amount in the tails of $396,000. For the Student Loan Advocate Appropriation, the Senate and House mirror each other at an appropriation of $394,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount in the tails. On line 94, there is an increase for maintaining current service levels in the Workers' Compensation Fund, and this is an increase of $21,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $28,000 in the tails. Again, the Senate and House are in agreement on this line. On line 96, there's a transfer out to the Minnesota Council on Economic Education from the Special Revenue Fund of $100,000 in fiscal year 24-25, and that is the same in the Senate and House positions. We'll now turn to page 3. Under the Telecommunications Division in Commerce on line 113, there's a maintaining current service levels increase of $116,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $156,000 in the tails, and that amount is the same in the Senate and House positions. Jumping down to the Insurance Division of Commerce, on line 137, there's a House-only provision for the National Conference of Insurance Legislators membership. That's $40,000 over the biennium in fiscal year 24-25 one time. On line 141, the Senate and House have the same amounts for maintaining current service levels at $587,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $784,000 in the tails. On line 142, the Senate and the House have the same amount here for standardized plans of $272,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount ongoing in the tails. On line 143, there's a one-time appropriation in both the Senate and House positions for a free primary care for Minnesotans study of $636,000 in fiscal year 24-25. On line 144, for insurance division staffing and operations, the Senate has an increase of $3,697,000 in fiscal year 24-25. And $3,930,000 in fiscal year 26-27. The House amounts are slightly different here at $3.393 million in fiscal year 24-25 and $3.6 million in fiscal year 26-27. On line 146, the psychiatric collaborative care model covered is the same appropriation in both Senate and House. They have both positions have $84,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount ongoing. On line 147, both the Senate and the House have the same provision of existing statutory health benefits mandate report of $50,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and that same amount ongoing in the tails. And on line 151, another increase to the Workers' Compensation Fund for maintaining current service levels, $60,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $80,000 ongoing in the tails. That amount is the same in both positions. Now going to page 4. The reinsurance division doesn't have any changes in the bill, but does carry the 2022 transfer to the premium security account. Under the weights and measures division of commerce, there's one change item, maintaining current service levels on line 180. The House and the Senate are the same here at 87,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and 112,000 in the tails. And I'll just point members to the revenue lines in this next total table. Beginning on line 201 for the Money Transmission Modernization Act, 12,000 in both the Senate and House positions is coming back into the special revenue fund, netting out that appropriation that was listed previously. On line 202, the transfer from the premium security account to the general fund is a $275.775 million one-time transfer in fiscal year 2026. On line 203, there's some general fund revenue from the telecommunications assessment. Both the Senate and House have this at the same amount of $116,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $156,000 in the tails. $156,000, excuse me. On line 204, the Senate and the House also have the same amount of revenue coming in for fee modernization of $968,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount ongoing. That brings the total of the Department of Commerce on line 211, all fund total. I'll point out the general fund total. That might be a little bit easier looking at the targets. On line 207, the total increase for the Senate's position to the Department of Commerce is $8.9 million in the first biennium and a savings of $266.8 million in the tails. For the House position, the fiscal year 24-25 general fund net amount is $8.6 million increase and a savings of $267.1 million in the tails. Moving on to page 5, these are the remaining agencies within Senate File 2744 that receive appropriations. For the Attorney General, on line 216, for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act, the House and Senate have the same appropriation of $1,098,000 in fiscal year 24-25, and that same amount ongoing. And I'll also point out that there is some revenue amounts on line 224 and 225. I skipped line 217. So going back up, for the Minnesota Age Appropriate Design Code Act, this is a House-only provision with a $284,000 appropriation in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount ongoing in the tails. Now going back to revenues, on line 224, Prescription Drug Affordability Act is bringing in some revenue to the general fund of $146,000 in fiscal year 24-25, the same amount ongoing in the tails and the same in both positions. On line 225 for the Minnesota Age Appropriate Design Act, the House is counting a revenue of $200,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and the same amount of revenue in the tails. I'll go to the Health Department next. On line 234, for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act, the Department of Health is receiving $120,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $102,000 in fiscal year 26-27. The same amount is in the House and Senate positions. On line 235, for existing statutory health benefit mandates report, the department is receiving $10,000 in fiscal year 24-25, the same amount in the tails, and the same amount is in both positions. Finally, the Education Department is receiving appropriation of $100,000 in fiscal year 2024 one time for the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. And this is appropriation from the general fund, but there's also a transfer coming in from the Economic Education Fund. So the net amount to this is going to be a net zero amount with 100 expenditure and 100,000 revenue. So I'll end there. If members have any questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I'll pass it along to council.
Before we go to council, any questions on the spreadsheet? With that, will it be Mr. Hodala or Ms. Pompuch doing that?
Go together.
Go ahead.
Chair and members, I'm Laurie Pompu, House Research.
And I'm Nolan Hudala, Senate Counsel.
And we're going to do a walkthrough of Senate File 2744, beginning in Article 2. Article 2, Section 1, begins on page R1 of the side-by-side. This provides that information filed with the Commissioner of Commerce pursuant to Minnesota Statute 65A-298 is non-public until the filing becomes effective. Section 2, beginning on page R2, this is the Family Protection Act. It refers to property and casualty policy exclusions. It creates permitted exclusions and prohibited exclusions in certain types of property and casualty insurance. On to page R4, Section 3, this increases certain fees paid by insurance companies to the Commissioner of Commerce. That will be deposited into the general fund.
Moving on to House Section 4, you'll see there is a similar provision. I would make a preliminary note that similar provisions generally refer to minor technical changes. You'll see another denotation throughout this summary that is different. Those typically relate to policy-based changes. So this is a similar change. It refers to suicide provisions that start on page R5 of the side-by-side and allows a life insurance policy to exclude a death benefit if an insured dies within 1 year of the issuance of the policy. There are technical differences on the Senate side, lines 9.30, 10.3, and 10.10.
On to page R5. This also relates to suicide provisions. It requires the same life insurance policies to explicitly state that if an insured completes suicide within 1 year, depending on the policies, the beneficiaries will only receive a refund of the premiums and has an effective date of 2024.
The next section is another similar section. It's on page R7. It relates to provider discrimination and requires group policies and group subscriber contracts to provide direct reimbursement for services at hospitals or psychiatric residential treatment facilities if those services are performed by a mental health professional.
Beginning on page R7, sections 7 to 15 and 67 at the end of this article all relate to Medicare supplemental policies. These sections create an open enrollment period. That's the same as the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, and they prohibit the use of medical underwriting and the application of pre-existing condition limitations on medical supplemental policies. These sections have an effective date of August 1, 2024.
The following section is another similar provision. It relates to preventive items and services. Specifically, it creates a definition of preventive items and services in Chapter 62D. It further includes preventive items and services in the definition of essential health benefits. These sections further delete cross-references to the Federal Affordable Care Act. There were two notes that I would make. The House language does not include changes to a specific section. That specific section is located on page R19. And then Senate language in section 43 makes a technical difference as well.
On to page R19. This section is a House-only provision. It provides that mandated health benefit proposals do not include proposals that make state law consistent with federal law. This has an effective date of the day following final enactment. Then on to page R20, this also relates to mandated health benefit proposals, and it requires the commissioner to give 45 days notice to the public when requesting certain information. It requires the commissioner to notify chairs, and it clarifies that information that is trade secret is non-public after it's when it's submitted to the Commissioner of Commerce. On to R21, this requires the Commissioner of Commerce to notify health plan companies of changes to benefits when a mandated health benefit proposal has become law. It requires health plans to report to the commissioner their estimated cost attributable to this change for a 10-year period, and it requires the commissioner to report annually to the legislatures about amounts paid to defray the cost of additional health insurance mandates as required under the ACA.
Moving to page R22, there are minor technical differences in this language, notably in the definition of manufacturer. Specifically, this section outlines definitions, key terms for purposes of new sections that are created by law, including consumer price index, manufacturer, and wholesale acquisition cost.
Beginning on page R22, all of these sections that we're discussing will relate to the Prescription Drug Affordability Board and Council. Section 24, beginning on R22, prohibits excess price increases, and it provides a calculation for how a price increase is considered excessive and provides exemptions. On to R23, we have Section 25. It requires a registered agent in office within the state of a manufacturer of generic or off-patent drugs.
The next section is a similar section. It is on page R23. Specifically, it starts on, if you look at the Senate side, line 14.26. That section relates to enforcement. Specifically, it requires the Commissioner of Health to notify the manufacturer, Attorney General, and in the Senate's language, however not in the House's language, hence the similar designation. The Senate requires notification also be provided to the Board of Pharmacy. I would note that that difference of notification to the Board of Pharmacy represents the difference between the language of the bills, as you'll see moving forward. The following section is on R25. Again, it's a similar section, and again, that similar distinction comes from the difference in notification to the Board of Pharmacy. What that section does is it prohibits a manufacturer from withdrawing a drug from sale or distribution in the state in order to avoid the prohibition on excessive price increases. It further requires a manufacturer to provide at least 90 days prior written notice of withdrawal of the sale or distribution of a generic or off-patent drug from the state.
The next three sections are all on page R25. They provide a severability clause for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act. They provide a citation for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act. And they provide definitions for the Prescription Drug Advisory Council. On to page R26, this is the Prescription Drug Affordability Board. It requires the LCC to establish it, determines how membership is created, what the terms will be, how chairs are elected, what they can do when they need technical assistance, that they'll be compensated pursuant to the standard compensation system, and that they are subject to the open meeting laws.
So on page R28, you'll see the first section designated as a different section. This section relates to the Prescription Drug Affordability Advisory Council. Specifically, the Senate provides that the Advisory Council members representing various industries do not receive compensation. You'll find that on page R29 on the Senate side, lines 21.2 to 21.3. In addition, this section requires the governor to appoint the advisory council to advise the board on drug cost issues and to represent stakeholder views. It specifies criteria related to knowledge, expertise, and also outlines a specific membership of the council.
On to page R29 of Article 2, this is the Prescription Drug Affordability Conflict of Interest section and lays out what the conflict of interest policy will be and prohibitions.
Then we move to another different section, again, within the Prescription Drug Price Information section. This section requires the Commissioner of Health to provide the Prescription Drug Affordability Board with the information reported to the commissioner by drug manufacturers under Section 62J.84. The primary difference between the House and the Senate positions is that the House and Senate specified different criteria for the drugs that may be identified by the board for a potential cost review.
Beginning on page R31, prescription drug product reviews, it's how the board's going to function, what considerations and information they have to take into consideration when making a determination, and it classifies the data that they receive. On to page R32, determinations, compliance, remedies. This discusses upper payment limits, how upper payment limits will be administered and set, and consequences for non-compliance with this section, and how board decisions can be appealed. The next three sections are all on page R34. They require reports. They discuss that the Prescription Drug Affordability Board does not apply to ERISA plans or Medicare Part D plans. And then on page R34, we have another severability clause.
Continuing on page R34, specifically the Senate side, line 27.6, you'll see a section on network adequacy. The Senate language does not include paragraph B, which is included in the House language. That paragraph B requires the Commissioner of Health to determine network sufficiency by referencing reasonable criteria, which, you know, may include certain enumerated items outlined in that paragraph.
Page R36, credentialing of providers. This requires that between July 1st, 2023 and June 30th, 2025, health plan companies have to enter into contracts for mental health services if a provider reaches certain criteria that are designated in that section.
The next section is a similar section, specifically relates to designation and includes psychiatric residential treatment facilities in the list of facilities that the Commissioner of Health may designate as an essential community provider. The main reason for the similar designation is technical changes, as you can identify on the House side, lines 50.16, 51.8, and 51.9.
R40, this is the same provision, and it creates the Mental Health Parity and Substance Abuse Accountability Office within the Department of Commerce to ensure the implementation of certain regulations and statutes on a state and federal level relating to mental health parity and addiction.
The following section is a different section. It's located on page R40, specifically at the bottom of that page. It provides cost-sharing requirements and benefit or service limitations for psychiatric residential treatment facility services. It further provides that all health plan companies offering health plans providing for alcoholism, mental health, or chemical dependency benefits must provide reimbursement for the benefits delivered through the psychiatric collaborative care model.
And now pages R44 to R46 of Article 2, we have the same provisions. These are sections 48 to 52. These sections deal with dental providers and dental organizations, and they discuss contracts between the two and disclosures and information related to methods of payment and the use of leased networks.
Moving to page R47, you'll see language relating to standard plans. This language states that health plan companies that offer individual health plans must ensure that certain health plans conform to those standard plan parameters. In addition, it requires a health plan company offering individual health plans to offer one of these standard plans at each level and in each geographic rating area that the health plan services. The following section is a different section. It is a new section of law governing clinician-administered drugs. It specifically requires a specialty pharmacy that ships clinician-administered drugs to a healthcare provider or pharmacy to meet certain requirements, and it places certain delivery requirements on specialty pharmacies. The differences between the House and Senate language derive from the definition of affiliated pharmacy, and also an exclusion of managed care plans and county-based purchasing plans relating to the provision of coverage to public health care program enrollees from the requirements of this section. Moving on to page R49, specifically starting on the Senate side of that page, line 14.17, you'll find a section on homeowners insurance fortified program standards. What that language does is it requires an insurer to provide a premium discount or an insurance rate reduction to an owner that builds or locates a new insurable property in Minnesota, or otherwise one who retrofits an existing property to meet the requirements to be an insurable property in Minnesota. On R51, Senate sideline 17.18, you'll see a similar provision that relates to the Strength of Minnesota Homes Program. What that does is it establishes the Strength of Minnesota Homes Program within the Department of Commerce to provide grants to retrofit insurable properties to resist loss due to common perils.
And then on to page R54. This has no comparable provision in the Senate, and this relates to homeowners liability insurance and discrimination based on dogs. It prohibits refusing to renew, canceling or failing to write homeowners insurance based solely on the fact that a homeowner has a specific breed of dog. There are exceptions in subdivision 2 for situations where a dog has been classified as dangerous or if sound underwriting principles reasonably relate to an actual or anticipated loss, or if a specific dog has a history of causing injury or the homeowner has a history of owning animals that cause injury. This section is effective April 1st, 2024.
The immediately following section is a similar section on time limits for certain auto insurance policies. Specifically, the section provides that causes of actions under a plan of reparation security are subject to a 6-year statute of limitations, except that a cause of action relating to underinsured motorist coverage is instead subject to a 4-year statute of limitation. There are minor technical differences on the effective date.
On to page R55 of Article 2, this relates to the Prescription Drug Affordability Act, and it allows a civil penalty of up to $25,000 to be imposed for each separate violation of 62J.842. And the beginning of R56 and on to page R60, the relevant language is on page R60. This adds a manufacturer who violates a section of the Prescription Drug Affordability Act to the list of people that's conduct is prohibited and subject to a disciplinary action. On to R60. This is the same in the House and the Senate. This requires medical assistant benefit plans to include cost sharing for prescription drugs and related medical supplies to treat chronic diseases as required, as previously discussed under Section 62Q.81. This is effective January 1st, 2024. Section 63 on R61 and relevant language on R62 deals with managed care contracts, and it requires the Commissioner of Health to require their managed care plans to comply with a 6-month timely filing standard, and it provides an exemptions to this standard when the resubmission of claims is needed because there's been a denial, a request for more information, or there's an issue with the system. On to page R65, cost sharing. This requires Minnesota Care to include the same cost-sharing requirements to treat chronic diseases as required under 62Q.81. The effective date of this is January 1st, 2024.
On page R65, if you want to get specific, the Senate side, line 54.15, is a similar section. This section requires the Commissioner of Commerce to amend the rules regarding automotive self-insurance, and related to that, the networking capital. it authorizes expedited rulemaking. The one note I would make is that the Senate version includes an effective date. Continuing on to the following section, which is different between the House and Senate bills, it requires the Commission of Commerce to evaluate existing Minnesota statutory provisions that would constitute a state-required benefit included in Minnesota's Essential Health Benefit Benchmark Plan if the statutory provision was offered as a legislative proposal on the date of enactment of the bill.
And the last section of Article 2 is a House-only section. It's a repealer that relates to Medicare supplement plans.
That's a long article, but there's a few more to come. So moving on to Article 3, which predominantly relates to financial institutions, it leads off with a Senate-only provision. Specifically, that provision amends Minnesota Statute 8.31, such that the Attorney General must investigate violations of the new section on price gouging during abnormal market conditions.
Onto Section 1 of the House side. This is the same as the Senate. This is just a technical change that relates to the Money Transmission Model Act. Beginning on page R2, this is the same in the House and the Senate. It allows financial institutions to close for more than 48 hours in a Monday through Friday without the prior approval of the commissioner. This will be pages of Article 3, R2 to R8, one provision on R9 and R50. These relate to consumer small and short-term loans. These are House-only provisions. They regulate consumer small and short-term loans. They place annual percentage rates limitations of up to 36%, and they prohibit lenders of these types of loans for attempting to evade the requirements of these limitations. These sections are effective August 1, 2023. The next two sections require banks and credit unions to submit a climate risk disclosure survey to the Commissioner of Commerce. These are House-only provisions, and they are on page R8. And then R9 to R50, and part of the repealer in R67, this is the Model Money Transmission Modernization Act. These sections codify the Conference of State Bank Supervisors Model Act into Chapter 53B of Minnesota law.
From page R51 to R56 are similar sections on residential mortgage loan servicers. These sections require residential mortgage loan servicers to meet certain requirements. Those requirements relate to assets, liquidity, risk management, and corporate government. The House language corrects minor technical errors, which you can locate at the bottom of page R53. Another similar section follows those. This section creates a student loan advocate within the Department of Commerce to help resolve complaints from student loan borrowers. It has provisions to organize data on borrower complaints, provide information to the public, as well as to monitor current laws. There are minor technical differences on page R57.
Beginning on page R58 with the pertinent language, on page R61, this relates to federal covered securities, and it allows small corporate offerings to be offered up to the limit under federal law versus state law.
Continuing on page R61 is the section relating to the bill's coerced debt sections. This is a similar provision between the House and the Senate. And this difference can be seen on page R63, House sideline 153.2. And you'll see the similar designation for the same reason throughout the coerced debt sections. Those sections include, one, a section on coerced debt, which prohibits a person from causing another person to incur coerced debt. It also includes another section relating to notice to creditor of coerced debt that requires a debtor at least 30 days prior to taking action under section 332.74. That section relates to a debtor's right to petition for declarative and injunctive relief to notify a creditor that the debt on which the creditor demands payment is coerced debt, as well as to request that the creditor cease all collection activities related thereto. Moving on to the next section, there are additional minor technical differences in the section on debtor remedies. That section provides for legal rights, procedures, and defenses for civil actions related to coerced debt. And then again, you'll see similar minor technical differences that I referenced above that simply relate to changes in the effective date header. This section on creditor remedies, which is located on page R66, clarifies that nothing in sections 332.71 to 332.74 diminishes the rights of a creditor to seek payment for a coerced debt from the person who caused it to be incurred.
On page R66, there's a House and Senate provision that are the same. It requires the Commissioner of Commerce to amend rules related to the use of unaudited financial statements by banks and other lenders. On page R66, there's a House-only provision that requires the Minnesota Council on Economic Education to use grants in a specific way.
And then finally, for Article 3, there's a section as a repealer. The repealer is different in that the Senate does not include paragraph C, which relates to financial institution annual reports and audit requirements. Moving along to the next article, Article 4. At the outset of this article, you will see one that also is duplicated in Article 3. That section being one that relates to price gouging. It amends section 8.31 of the existing Minnesota statutes to incorporate price gouging.
Article 4, House-only language, R1. This is a cross-reference for the Age-Appropriate Design Code Act regarding data protections for government data.
Remaining on page R1 at line 2.21 of the Senate side, you'll see a similar section which defines global positioning system starter interruptive device as well as GPS starter interrupt device.
Still on page R1, it removes fuel or ignition kill switch from the definition of theft deterrent device. On to page R2, section 4, this is the same between the House and the Senate. It requires sellers to disclose in a retail installment contract whether a GPS starter interrupter device is installed in the motor vehicle. On to R2, this is a House-only provision, section 5. This requires manufacturers to compensate new car dealers for warranty labor according to time guides used by the dealer for their non-warranty repair orders. It also provides parameters for the new car dealers to calculate compensation when there's no time guide and how to account for non-repair time related to repairs. On to R3. This is the same in the House and the Senate. It allows gasoline to be sold at the actual current delivered invoice or replacement cost rate. R4, this is a House-only provision. It provides that people who are engaged in deceptive trade practices, that they are engaged in deceptive trade practices when they engage in unfair methods of competition or unfair or unconscionable acts or practices. R5 includes a standard of proof that cross-references to those deceptive trade practices.
Continuing on page R5, there's a similar provision on unlawful gasoline sales. That section clarifies that a retailer who offers gasoline at a below-cost price due to the use of coupons, loyalty programs, membership-based pricing programs, or other promotions does not violate this section. There are minor technical differences, but predominantly to separate the sections into three distinct paragraphs. The following section is also similar between the House and the Senate. It relates to remedies relating to robocalls. It authorizes the Attorney General to sue for and recover a civil penalty if the person is found to have violated the sections that relate to robocalls. The difference between the two bills is that the Senate has a maximum civil penalty of $50,000 as opposed to the House provision, which is $100,000.
The next three sections are all on page R6. They're all the same in the House and the Senate. The first prohibits a residential building contractor from charging a person an unconscionably excessive price or from charging an insurer a rate for labor that exceeds the amount charged to the general public after there has been a severe thunderstorm. On section 12 and 13, House side, these refer to the robocall section that Nolan just described.
On page R6, Senate side line 28.9, you'll see a section on post-loss assignment of benefits. This establishes compliance requirements for post-loss assignment of rights or benefits to a residential contractor under a property and casualty insurance policy, which insures residential real estate. There are minor technical differences between the two. The following section on the Digital Fair Repair Act begins on page R8. This contains similar language. Specifically, this section generally requires an original equipment manufacturer to make available documentation, parts, and tools for diagnostic, maintenance, or repair purposes. The following section, which is Senate Section 31, is a Senate-only provision on abnormal market disruptions, as well as unconscionably excessive prices. It begins on page R14. This section generally prohibits a person from selling an essential consumer good or service for an unconscionably excessive price during an abnormal market disruption, and it further establishes a civil penalty for a person who violated this new section of law. On page R15, there is a different section that relates to written warranties, specifically required written warranties, and it requires such a warranty on a vehicle sold by a used motor vehicle dealer that has over 75,000 miles. In the Senate version, it is capped at 200,000 miles, and that warranty must be in effect for 15 days or 500 miles, whichever comes first. The following section on exclusion has the same difference in that the Senate language applies warranty to vehicles with more than 75,000 miles, but again caps it at 200,000 miles. This exclusion section provides that used motor vehicles that fall within that mileage range do not fall within the exclusion provided in section 325F.662, subdivision 3, from the express warranty requirements.
On to page R18 of Article 4. This is a House-only provision. This makes a technical change about oral disclosures for Internet sales. The next three sections are all on page R19. These are House-only provisions. They prohibit a person from engaging in unfair or unconscionable practices in the sale of merchandise, clarifies the meaning of unfair method of competition or unfair or unconscionable act or practice. Section 21 is a House-only provision that creates a private right of action for family farmers that are injured by a violation of Minnesota Statute Section 325F.69-2.70. The effective date of this section is August 1st, 2023.
The Genetic Information Privacy Act, which begins at the bottom of page R19, is classified as a different section. This act requires a direct-to-consumer genetic testing company to provide information regarding the company's policies governing collection, use, and maintenance of genetic data, and requires the company to obtain the consumer's consent in various situations relating to the usage of genetic data. The following section is classified as a similar section due to minor technical differences. You can locate those differences on page R24. This section requires sellers and lessors of goods and services that impose a surcharge on credit or charge card transactions to disclose the surcharge in a specific manner depending on how the transaction takes place.
On to section 24, this is on page R25, and these are house-only provisions. This creates the age-appropriate design code. This will go from page R25 through R32, which includes effective dates for these sections. It provides key terms. It provides a short citation. It establishes what businesses are subject to the AADC, entities that are excluded from it, what businesses' obligations are, and how data is treated under it. It allows for attorney general enforcement. And then, as I said, on page R32, section 29, there are various effective dates. And that is the end of Article 4. We are on to Article 5, Miscellaneous Commerce Policy. Beginning on R1, adds manufactured home park to requirements related to rate structure for water. This section is effective August 1st, 2024.
Moving on to the following section, this is classified as a similar section with small technical differences located on Senate side line 25.29 as well as on the House side 192.8. Specifically, what this section does is it allows a tribal government to request a telecommunications pricing plan.
On page R2, this is the same between the House and the Senate. This relates to reporting by gasoline retailers. The next three sections are all on page R3. They define commodity rate for utility services. They add cross-references to public utility. And they clarify that the installation of water and sewer meters is not a substantial modification of a lease for manufactured home park owners if they comply with another cross-referenced area of law. On to R4, the next four sections are all on this page. They again refer to manufactured home park owners, what a utility provider is, how a park owner can bill residents, how metering must be take place, and that the park owner can charge a utility charge for metered services. All of these sections are effective. They have various, sorry.
On R5 is a section relating to manufactured home park utilities, which we've been discussing. It prohibits a manufactured home park owner from increasing lot rents for 13 months following the commencement of utility bills for a resident whose lease included water services. The bill language differs between the House and the Senate. Specifically, the House language includes water and sewer services.
On page R5, the next four sections are House-only provisions, and they relate to common interest communities, or also known as homeowners associations. They prohibit a unit owner from being charged by the association attorney's fees and costs if the owner disputes a fine or assessment, and if the board does not adopt a resolution levying that fine or assessment against the unit owner. It requires the unit owner's association to provide the owner with certain information when they are going to be levying a fine or assessment. And these are pasted into different areas depending on when the common interest community was created, and that's R5, R8, R10. On R14, it clarifies that any portion of an assessment that represents attorney's fees cannot be included in the amount a unit owner must pay to be reinstated. And then on to R17, this is a technical change that makes an appropriation available to June 30th, 2024, an appropriation that was made in a previous biennium. R17, this makes a technical change to an appropriation that was made in a previous biennium to clarify that it is a transfer and not an appropriation.
Moving on to R18, which finally, for my sake at least, is the final section. It starts on Senate side, line 95.3, and it's on the financial review of grant and business subsidy recipients. this language differs between the two bills, but in general, it requires a granting agency to provide additional insight for grants and business subsidies awarded from appropriations, and it further applies to competitive, sole source, single source, and legislatively named grants.
And the last section of Article 5 is on page R20, and this is a repealer that relates to the utility sections.
Thank you, Council. Questions or discussion from the committee? Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the great discussions we've had as we've been looking at this bill. I have a series of motions now to sort of adopt some of the same and similar provisions as well as some of the provisions that we've come to an agreement upon. And I'll try and group these motions together for the committee's efficient so we don't spend a really long time here going through them. My first motion would be that, and for people watching and for committee members, I'll be working off the bill comparison summary document moving from front to back as I make these motions. Mr. Chair, my first motion is to adopt on the Senate Article 2, Section 1, Section 10, Section 11. This is the fee modernization and suicide provisions.
Discussion on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I move that on we adopt on House Article 2, Section 6. This relates to psychiatric residential treatment facilities.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt in Article 2, the House side, Sections 16 through 19, 43, 44, and 53, noting that there's a technical correction that will be made to Section 43 by nonpartisan staff. But I would move adoption of those. This relates to coverage of preventative items and services.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion is adopted. Representative Stevens.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt House Article 2, Section 20 and 21. These are changes to the mandated health benefit proposal.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Motion is adopted. Representative Stevens.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt from Article 2 on the House side, Sections 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. These are related to the price gouging of pharmaceuticals.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt on the Senate side Article 2, Section 17, and Section 18. These relate to the Prescription Drug Affordability Advisory Council and conflicts of interest of the same.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move on the House side that we adopt from Article 2, Sections 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, and 39. These relate to the Prescription Drug Affordability Board.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that on the House side, Article 2, that we adopt Sections 40, 41, and 42. These relate to network adequacy and psychiatric residential treatment facilities.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move on Article 2 on the House side that we adopt Sections 45 and 46. These relate to mental health parity, substance abuse, and alcoholism.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that on the House side, Article 2, that we would adopt Section 47, which relates to cost sharing for prescription drugs and limiting copays.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move on the Senate side, Article 2, that we adopt Sections 12 through 16 related to dental providers and dental organizations.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move on the House side that we would adopt from Article 2, Section 54. This relates to the standardization of plans.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that from the House side that we would adopt Sections 56, 57. Yes, these are related to the Fortified Homes program, the Department of Commerce.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair,
Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that on Article 2 that we adopt Section 58 and 59. This relates to homeowners liability insurance for dogs as well as time limitations on plan of reparations.
Moving House language?
House language, Article 2, Sections 58 and 59.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move that from the Senate side we adopt Sections Article 2, Section 35, 36, and 37. These relate to forms of disciplinary action, grounds for disciplinary action, and cost sharing.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, from the House side, I would move that we adopt from Article 2, Section 63 and 64. This relates to... I'm sorry, not 63, just 64, which is another provision relating to cost sharing of prescription drugs.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that from the Senate side we adopt Article 2, Section 50. This relates to self-insurance for co-ops.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Representative Stephen, motion is carried.
Mr. Chair, from Article 2, I would move on the House side, Section 66, which relates to evaluation of health benefit mandates that are retrospective.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, in Article 3, I would move from the Senate side Sections 1 and 2, which relate to money transmitters and bank hours.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevens.
Mr. Chair, from Article 3, I would move adoption on the House side of Sections 11 and 12, which relate to a climate risk disclosure survey.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we've had some conversations on this climate risk disclosure survey, and I just had some questions and concerns on it. I'd say on one of the items, I don't know if this bill was even introduced in the Senate, and we didn't have a hearing on the Senate side, so I just would ask some more time to work with the conferees to see if we can maybe address some of the concerns that folks have had on the impact that this could have on state chartered banks. I think we can have a solution that opens up some opportunities for climate risk assessments, but maybe give some more flexibility to those institutions that the state regulates.
Representative Roderick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I underscore what former Representative Rasmussen, now Senator Rasmussen, is proposing. The state of Minnesota has been very good in working with their state chartered banks, and we've had a number of institutions that have abandoned federal charters and come back to the state of Minnesota, and the purpose of that is that they find that the regulatory climate is much better in the state of Minnesota than it is under federal regulation. And in the federal regulation, this is a $100 billion asset requirement. It's a $1 billion asset requirement for state chartered banks. And so I think that there's there's room for conversation and negotiation on here to try to keep Minnesota a competitive place to have state chartered banks instead of just federally chartered banks.
It's Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rasmussen, I think this is an important provision. I think we had a good hearing and a lot of discussion on it in the House. I'm happy to have a continued discussion with you about it, though, so I'll withdraw the motion for today.
Motion is withdrawn. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption from Article 3, Sections 2 through 48. This is Model Money Transmission Modernization Act.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, from Article 3 on the House side, I would move adoption of Sections 62 through 65 and 66. This is residential mortgage loan servicers regulation as well as the creation of a student loan advocate in the Department of Commerce.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, from Article 3, I would move from the Senate side Sections 20, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49. This is some language about securities and enabling small businesses to have more access to federal conformity, and as well as the coerced debt proposal. Yes, that's what it is.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator or Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move from Article 3, adoption of Section 74 on the House side, which is grants to the Minnesota Council on Economic Education.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move from Article 3, Senate Sections 50 and 51. This is a repealer.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
All right. Mr. Chair, on Article 4, I would move adoption of House language Sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. This is language related to so-called kill switches and requiring disclosures. It also involves language related to warranty, how dealers are compensated for warranty repair, and it also includes provisions related to sale of gasoline and removing the minimum markup, as well as some language related to deceptive trade practices.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, and I would just comment from the chair first, Senator Rasmussen, that on one of these items in particular, the retail rate for labor, we have an amendment forthcoming at a future committee meeting, which will change the effective date on that in response to concerns. That won't be adopted today, but that is forthcoming. But Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the one concern I would have with adopting Section 7 of the House language, which is on deceptive trade practices, I know there's some discussion around a potential amendment on that bill, and so would ask that maybe we hold off on adopting that section for a future meeting so we can have some more discussion with stakeholders on that.
Representative Stevenson.
So I will modify my motion today to sections from House Article 4, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, and 9.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I'd move adoption from the Senate side of Article 4, Section 25. This relates to civil penalties for robocalls.
Members, and this incorporates Senator Senator Dreheim's amendment that was offered on the floor. Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, on Article 4, I would move adoption of House language Section 14, which relates to post-loss assignment of benefits.
Discussion on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion is adopted.
I know, I just said wait, but Carly then texted me and said she's ready to go, so okay, I'm going to make this motion.
Fine.
Mr. Chair, I would move from Article 4 on the Senate side, Sections 32 and 33, which relate to used car warranties.
Discussion on that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move from the from Article 4, Sections 18 and... Well, I'll just move 18 now. I will note, I'm just going to anticipate Senator Rasmussen's objections to Sections 19 and 20 for now. So I will not make those motions, but I will move Section 18, which makes a technical change to the salvage title provision.
Discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption from Article 4, House language, Section 22-23. So the first section relates to genetic information privacy. The second section relates to credit card surcharges.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Next amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I am going to move to Article 5 on the Senate side, Section 21, which relates to demand reduction measures.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Also from Article 5, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the House language in Section 2, which relates to... the state government pricing plans, including tribal governments.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, from Article 5, I move adoption of Senate language, Section 3, Section 36, Section 37, Section 38, Section 39, Section 40, Section 41, Section 42. These all relate to... utility building in mobile home communities.
Discussion on that motion?
Except for the first one, which relates to report on biofuels. Okay.
Senator Rasmussen.
Oh, okay. You're good.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I would move from Article 5, sections on the House side, sections 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. So this relates to some more language around utility billing in mobile home communities, as well as some language around homeowners associations and legal claims, and finally makes a change makes a technical change related to an appropriation that's currently listed as a transfer in statute. This is a bill that we passed earlier this year.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Stevenson.
And last for today, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption from Article 5, Section 19. This is a repealer.
Discussion on that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Cotiza-Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did a quick follow-up on one of my provisions, which was in the bill, and I appreciate giving me a little bit more time. I understand it was a friendly amendment from Senator Dames in Article 4, Section 16 and 17, so I'd be fine moving on to the Senate language.
Which I think we did. That, yeah, we did that.
We did adopt that.
We did, okay.
I was moving fast. Sorry about that.
No worries. Thank you. I just wanted to double-check.
Well, members, as you can tell... there's really very little of this bill yet to wrap up. We have broad agreement between House and Senate positions, and there's no further business before the committee. I anticipate, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was going to say, when it's appropriate to ask this question, or you can answer it in your wrap-up. I know that the House Chair has several major bills that he's going to be working on, and I'm just wondering if we can get a roadmap as to... this committee's work. We've got other folks who are on other conference committees and stuff to try to coordinate this. And I know that there's other committees and commissions that are meeting that are going to take people from this tribunal, if you will, to a different set of circumstances. And so just looking to see what our roadmap might look like. And Representative Stevenson is very familiar with this question because it's asked quite regularly in committee.
Representative Thank you for the question, Representative O'Driscoll. We had hoped to meet as early as tomorrow to try to wrap this up. I don't think there's substantive disagreements going forward. However, I think for logistical reasons, we can't meet tomorrow. The earliest would be Friday, and we'll sure try to keep you notified. So,
Mr. Chair, do you anticipate that there will be a third meeting that would go into later Friday or into the weekend?
At this time, Representative O'Driscoll, I think we should be able to wrap this up in our next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But then again, the House will have the gavel, so anything could happen.
Senator Klein, I will do my best to keep the chair in line.
Further discussion from the committee? We are adjourned.